This is WSHU's After All Things with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. Drivers who speed through Connecticut work zones will start getting tickets today. There are now plans for 3 Long Island bridges to be replaced. Officials remind folks to be extra careful when swimming at our region's beaches. Plus, the 250 fun isn't over yet. A closer look at some of Connecticut's contributions to the revolution. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Public safety officials across our region are urging residents to take precaution as heavy rainfall and wind continues today. WSHU's Janice Roman has more.
Thousands of residents in the Long Island Sound region have lost power as a storm continues from the weekend. Officials warn of potential flash flooding, road closures, and power outages. In Connecticut, more than 100,000 homes lost power during the weekend. Eversource and United Illuminating are working to restore power throughout the week. On Long Island, Suffolk and Nassau counties were declared under a state of emergency until Tuesday. Public safety officials advise drivers to stay off roads, avoid down power lines, and never drive through a flooded road. For non-emergency related questions, call 211 for more information. For more storm updates, visit WSHU.org. Janice Roman, WSHU News.
Drivers who speed through certain work zones in Connecticut will be ticketed beginning today. WSHU's Molly Ingram reports the warning period for the state's Know the Zone program is over.
Drivers traveling more than 10 miles per hour over the speed limit in several work zones will now receive a warning or a $75 ticket. Going over 85 miles per hour gets you an automatic ticket, even if it's your first offense. The cameras are at locations across the state and can be moved based on where crews are working. The program's goal is to keep construction workers safe. There have been thousands of crashes and more than 10 deaths in CT work zones since 2021. Warnings and tickets will always be sent in the mail, and the Department of Transportation or the state will never text you asking for payment. If you get a text, it's a scam. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul was on Long Island today to encourage local police departments to apply for technology grants. WSHU's Desiree DiOrio has more.
At the Village of Freeport Police Department, Hochul announced $100 million in available funding for body cameras, drones, and even record management systems. Michael Smith is Freeport's chief of police. He says the state grants minimize the tax burden on residents and make the village safer for everyone.
Our officers want to come to work because they have the best equipment. They want to come to work because they have their body cameras. They want to have the latest technology as far as drones, license plate readers, sound meters. They want to be able to use the LIDAR system to stop speeders.
Hochul says $21 million in tech grants have already been awarded to Long Island police departments. Freeport got almost $400,000. Desiree DiOrio, WSHU News.
Coming up, a look at Connecticut's contributions to the American Revolution. Stay here.
One of the best things about public radio is discovering something new. That's the spirit behind NPR's Tiny Desk Contest on the Road Tour. This summer, the tour is making just 10 stops across the country, and New York is one of them. Hear 2026 contest winner Cure for Paranoia live at Warsaw in Brooklyn. WSHU's Emily Boyer and Molly Ingram will be there to introduce the opening act. Join us for a night of great music and a community of listeners who share your curiosity. NPR's Tiny Desk Contest on the Road, July 9th at Warsaw in Brooklyn. Tickets and details at WSHU.org.
As Long Islanders flock to the beaches and pools this summer, Suffolk County officials are reminding them how to stay safe in the water. Bobby Hazen is with the advocacy group Stop Drowning Now. He says drowning is the leading cause of death for kids age 1 to 4.
Anytime you're at a party, at a pool, at an open body of water, somebody has to be assigned as the water watcher, okay? not doing anything else. They're not being distracted. They're not on their phone. They're not having alcohol. They're not talking to anybody. Their only job is to watch the water.
At the beach, always swim in lifeguarded areas. Officials say anyone who's been drinking alcohol should stay out of the water and just enjoy the view. In New York, the Brooklyn Bridge briefly caught fire during the annual Macy's fireworks show. Flames and smoke were reported at four spots on the bridge's walkway. New York City police say the fires were very likely caused by the fireworks. No injuries were reported. The state of Connecticut is investigating a, quote, mountain of trash that was left at the East Haven transfer station. A resident complained about possible permitting issues last week, and the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection confirmed that they were working on a report but had not yet taken action. Law enforcement officials on Long Island say boating accidents have decreased by about one-third due to new safety standards. Brianna's Law requires powerboat operators to complete a maritime safety course. There were 104 boating accidents in 2019 before the law took effect. Last year, that number dropped to 69. Governor Kathy Hochul has announced plans to replace three aging rail bridges in eastern Long Island. WSHU's Shelley Hassman-Kadish has more.
The Metropolitan Transportation Authority is expected to complete design and construction of the bridges that carry vehicle traffic over Long Island Railroad tracks. The affected bridges are in Sagaponack, Amagansett, and Eastport. The MTA says they were built between 1895 and 1921 and have deteriorated significantly. The new bridges will be designed to meet all modern requirements. Demolition is expected to begin later this year. The project has a budget of $51 million and is slated for completion by July 2028. Shelley Hassman-Kadish, WSHU News.
Connecticut's Revolution is a new exhibit commemorating the nation's 250th anniversary and examines how Connecticut residents both affected and were affected by the events of the American Revolution. WSHU's Brian Scott Smith spoke with Connecticut historian Andy Horowitz and Jennifer Matos, administrator of the Museum of Connecticut History, about the exhibit, which is open now.
Andy and Jennifer from the state of Connecticut, we're talking about Connecticut's Revolution exhibition. Jennifer, you are the administrator of the Museum of Connecticut History. How did this all come about?
I've been with the Museum of Connecticut History, which is a unit within the Connecticut State Library. We're a state agency. So pretty early into my tenure, I was thinking about the semi-quincentennial and thinking about the collection that the State Library has, both within the Museum of Connecticut History in terms of artifacts and also the documents contained within the Connecticut State Library. And I really felt like we, of all institutions, would really be the perfect place to host a really large scale exhibit that would analyze Connecticut's role in the American Revolution.
So Andy, you're Connecticut State historian, also professor at UConn as well. How did you get involved in this? And also how between you start to decide what it is that was going to go into this? Because that must be a Herculean task.
It was, and it's been a privilege to work with the museum staff. Jen and her team are so good at this, which made it easy for me to be involved. But at the same time, it's just an incredible challenge to try to tell a story about Connecticut. We have rules as historians that we have to tell the truth. And the stakes of telling the story of the American Revolution are so high because these are our origin stories as a nation and as a state. And we aspired the past doesn't change, but the questions we ask about the past too. So we wanted together to try to tell a true story about Connecticut that corresponded to our interests and concerns from 2026. And we're really focused on the 1770s. This exhibit is entirely focused on that period of the Revolutionary War, the ideas that preceded it and the effects that followed from it. But we wanted to do so in a way that we thought would really grab people in the present and make them understand how significant this revolutionary transformational moment was.
Of course, all part of America's 250th anniversary on the 4th of July. Andy, give us a sense of maybe some stories that, you know, are significant for this exhibition.
One of the amazing privileges of getting to work at the Museum of Connecticut History on this project is that for a historian to get to go rummage through this treasure chest, this is the first time that anyone's brought together these objects in this way. There's so many that jump out, but let me set this up a little bit. Because the Declaration of Independence, of course, was signed on July 4th, 1776, but it took a few days for the news to spread. And the news of the declaration reached New York City probably around July 9th. We know there was a big public reading of the declaration on July 9th before a big crowd. And there's a politics of how I tell the story, because I might say that then hearing these revolutionary ideals, a group of citizens of the newly independent states were moved in a patriotic fervor, or I could say that there was unruly mob that ran downtown in New York, pulled down a statue of King George III. They put it on some carts and brought it to Litchfield, Connecticut. That's how it becomes a Connecticut story. Brought the statue to the home of Oliver and Laura Wolcott in Litchfield and melted it down into 40,000 musket balls. But they didn't melt the entire statue. As the statue was being carted across Connecticut, we think it was loyalists that saved a few pieces, pulled it off the cart, and maybe buried them to keep them safe. And one of those chunks was found in Wilton in the 19th century, a piece of the shoulder of the statue. And I think it's one of the gems of this collection, in this exhibit, a fragment, that fragment from Wilton that survived is in the exhibit. And for me, it's an amazing story in so many ways. It talks about how there were patriots and loyalists in Connecticut and all of that, and the incredible effort that Connecticut made to produce bullets for the cause of democracy. But it also, to me, is a story about the uses of history. Here are these colonists, now independent citizens, who have inherited a history that they didn't want anymore, a history of the monarchy, and they pull it down and use it to transform it into building a future that they did want, a future of liberty and independence. So anyway, that's one of the pieces I'm most excited to get to sit with in person in Hartford this year.
As a British person, I don't take that too personally, obviously, because, of course, we did do other things ourselves. Jennifer, perhaps you can point us to some of the other things that people can expect to see that might surprise them.
Yeah, I'm glad you said the word surprise. To be clear, the collection at the Museum of Connecticut History is more or less the same as it would have been during the bicentennial. Not many new objects have come in during that time. But as Andy said, we are bringing a 21st century perspective to these objects.
What does that mean?
It means that we're looking at things with modern eyes. And in some cases, that means scratching the surface and looking a little deeper than perhaps things have been looked at before. And a great example of this is one of our star objects. It's a Goddard broadside. It's a copy of the Declaration of Independence that was printed in January of 1777. So as Andy mentioned, of course, the first declaration is printed on July 4th, called the Dunlap. This is a second version that is actually authorized to have printed by Continental Congress in January of 1777 as a reinvigoration, trying to remind people of what we were fighting for. This document was printed and a copy was sent to each of the 13 states, along with a letter by John Hancock. And the State Library has this copy of Connecticut's, which is called the Goddard Broadside, because I'm sure this was on display in 1976 and probably talking about Connecticut's four signers, this is the first time the Declaration lists the signers. But the story that we really want to bring out, that's an unexpected story, is the story of Mary Catherine Goddard, who is a female printer who actually has her name on this document. And she's actually from Connecticut. She was born in the Groton area and ends up moving to Baltimore, working as a publisher and perhaps the first female postmaster of the United States. And here we have this document with this woman's name on it that I think very few people talked about during the bicentennial.
There's a sub-series podcast which delves a little bit further as well into certain subjects. So just talk to us a little bit about that, because that's a very 21st century take, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We want to show people how historians do history. And so the podcast, which is called Under the Charter Oak, we've selected six objects from the exhibit. All of them are objects within the collection of the Museum of Connecticut History. And you get to hear us curators and librarians talk about the objects and their historical significance.
Jen, tell us the details about when Connecticut's revolution runs from and to, and how people can find out details.
It's opening on Saturday, July 4th, and it'll run through July of 2027, and admission is free.
It's been great talking to you, Andy and Jennifer. Thanks for coming on WSHE.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For the latest from around Long Island Sound, listen to us on the radio, stream online, download our free app, and of course, tune in right here to the After All Things podcast every weekday evening. And don't forget to check out our brand new merch shop over at WSHU.org. Get your tees, tanks, mugs, and more. Just click shop up at the top of the page. I'm Sabrina Garone. Thank you for being with me today. Have a great rest of your evening, and we'll talk tomorrow.